EA meeting, February 3rd, 2010.
We'll go ahead and get call this meeting to order. It is 12:17 p.m. This is the February 3rd, 2010 meeting of the Employee Assembly, meeting in 316 Day Hall. It's Jason Seymour, Chair. We'll call the roll. David Brooks is out ill today. Tempa Dongtao had emailed me and said that she's attending the Soup and Hope. Tanya Grove?
Here.
Linda Kroll-Howell? Ned LaFell?
Here.
Leon Lawrence? Alan Mittman? Did you say Alan was going to be late?
Yeah.
Okay. Leslie Morris?
Here.
Gemma Osborne?
Here.
Tim Ostrander?
Here.
Stevie Phillips? Jason Seymour present. Gary Stewart?
Here.
An employee elected trustee, Beth McKinney?
Here.
GTSA liaison, Ben Hevener?
I'm here. Okay.
And attending from the Assembly's office, we have Amy O'Donnell. All right. Are there any late additions to the agenda? Hearing none, we're going to just go ahead and get started with our business of the day. It's a presentation from the EA Charter Committee on proposed membership changes. So, Tanya?
So, I know all of you got this yesterday from email. I hope you had a chance to look at it. But essentially, a group of us, Leon at the helm, myself, Gary, and Jason, took a look at the EA membership. Obviously, 13 people, what our body should is currently, is not composed the way it's supposed to be according to the charter. So what we'd like to propose is something new that would increase the EA from 13 seats to 33 seats. And what we've listed here is kind of pockets of the university where seats could come from. So those 33 people would be more useful in being able to go back to their home departments, the departments that they represent, and share the work that the EA is doing, so making us more powerful as a group. Because right now the problem is that we come to meetings and talk about things, but we're not getting information back to the majority of the campus. So what we would look at is having each of the 33 components run their own election. So, for example, agriculture and life sciences would decide this is how we want to do our elections. We're going to have people nominate, maybe we pull a name out of the hat, or however they want to do that. But they would do nominations, and they would select a person and say this person is going to be a representative for agriculture and life sciences. If no one steps forward to volunteer, we would ask that they appoint someone so that there is representation from every as many areas of the university as possible. From those 33 people, a six-person executive committee would kind of make the would make kind of representative decisions for the EA for emergency situations. If we had to call an emergency meeting or something like that, that would be that small group to do that. They would develop agendas, review the charter. They would also chair a committee each. I think it's a great idea. I think it's ambitious. I think that it will take the work of everyone who's on the EA next year to push it forward to make it happen. We're going to have to get out there. We're going to have to talk to departments. We're going to have to really make ourselves more visible in a way that we haven't in the past in order to make this happen. But I think if we can do it, it will make the EA a strong and powerful group, have a voice at the university that we have not had historically. And I think at this time, in this climate, we need the staff to have a voice, a better voice. So if anybody has questions or wants to throw out ideas, this is a draft. Mary has seen it. She thinks it's ambitious, but she's not holding us back from doing it.
Mary being Mary Opperman?
Yes.
So I would just add that this was a work of the Charter Review Committee. When we did this stuff, we tried to anticipate as many questions as possible that are going to be obvious. And is it going to be easy? No. It's going to be tough. I think more than us, I think we really need the help of the president and the senior staff and the deeds of directors to make this a viable thing. So what I'm hoping we can get out of today is, you know, you look at this thing and say, Jesus, why the hell are we even going down this road? It's just like, this is a lot of work. It's a lot of work. But I just don't think what we have now works, period. And I think that if we really want to be a democratic body and represent the staff of Cornell University, I'm a believer in the adage, if it's not broken, break it. And I just think we're at that stage. And so what I'm hoping we can get out of this thing is an email. I'm hoping that EA signs off on this thing. I'm hoping that today or tomorrow, Jason or somebody, and this thing needs to be turned around quickly, Wright, Scorton, CC's Opperman, Tommy, and Peggy. Tommy Bruce, of course, he's the VP over the assembly. Peggy manages the assemblies. Just said that, you know, we think this is a good idea, and that we would need, that in order to really look at this thing seriously, we need a small working group. And in my mind, I have some people that I think would make this thing happen. So be a couple from here, Assembly's Office, HR and Communications, and really look, you know, have a serious, serious look on what it would take to do this in a timely fashion. I think, you know, this is Cornell. We could kick this thing around for 4 years. I don't think it would be a good idea. And so I think the ask that the Charter Review Committee is making is for your blessing on this concept, an outreach to Scorton, get any feedback from him, and then the creation of a small working group to really nail down if this is viable, if there's stuff that we're not thinking about or haven't seen. Thanks.
Can I ask a question? Is the expectation that the larger group of 33 people would have the same commitment of meeting every other week?
Yeah. When we've talked to people at other universities our size, and where Scorton came from, their version of the employee assembly, it was like a force to be reckoned with. It was like, you know, Scorton's nice to us, he'll come by, he'll talk to us and stuff. But it was just stronger, you know, and the same at North Carolina, the same down at Penn State, and it's just...
You know what the numbers were, some of the other ones?
It was a representative body. It was like a...
That comparably sized.
It was a little Congress. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, there were a lot of different makeups. They had, one of them had a makeup by position type. So, you know, they had an administrative assistant, they had a technical support specialist, you know, all of those different positions. Some of them did it by areas of the university. Some of them did it by buildings. And we looked at a lot of those.
Job classification.
Yeah, job classification. So we looked at a lot of those different things. And this seemed like a good, doable option for us. I mean, I think it's going to be huge to go from 13 to 33. And who knows, 5 years from now, maybe we go from 33 to 66. You know, I mean, who knows?
Well, I applaud you guys. I mean, I think that's great. I think it's ambitious, but we need some things that are ambitious to do. You know, I'm worried only because we have trouble filling seats now. But I'm sure that the small committee will come up with a plan for that, and you know how to address each unit on how to do that. And we should have a date. You know, on this date,
yep.
You have applicants on this date.
Yep.
So.
We need help from the leadership of the university to make this happen.
Yeah.
They need to think this is important and that this is in their best interest.
And they can pass that importance on to the colleges and the units to
right.
say, this is important to us, therefore it should be important to you. And
yeah.
then it becomes important to the staff because it's important to the people above that.
Yeah. If they're tepid about it, it's going to be difficult.
I guess I have two comments. I'm sure that you have to know what the sort of organizing aspect element of this is like. I mean, for just a small group, of course, it's certainly an undertaking, making sure we have a room and food and agendas and all that good stuff. So, but I'm sure that's something you're thinking about and how this is going to be administered, because I think it would be quite an undertaking in itself, aside from the kinds of problems that we're trying to solve with it. I guess my only other wish is, and this is not to be taken too personally, but I'm not convinced that this particular format is necessarily not working, as you say. I think there are, I mean, let me put it this way. I think that the problems that you perceive as that this small group has, I'm not sure that becoming a bigger group is going to necessarily solve it. I'm from my point of view, I think one of the problems we have is recognition and identity and having some input from staff. And I recognize that this bigger model is supposed to help with that in some way, to broaden, as you said, you know, its reach. At the same time, I think that that problem could also be addressed now, and I'm not sure that, and it should be, regardless whether we go small or large. So I think that should actually be dealt with in a sort of in a different form about how are we going to continue to raise our presence and our in the staff community, and I think that's an important one. I will say, though, that I'm not putting an inordinate amount of effort into my work here, but I will say that I'm conscientious. I come to the meetings. I'm, you know, heading a committee and those sorts of things. And I feel like I am making a difference, and I feel like it is working in some small capacity. So I want us to be careful also about the language we use to describe ourselves and the efforts we're making, because we need to be able to portray a positive, you know, the work that we do in a very positive way, both for this and for ourselves now. So my wish is that when you're referring to problems that we may be having, that you could frame it in a way of problems to be solved as opposed to this isn't working, because it feels a little defeating for me, is putting in some time here to do the work. And I feel like if it's not working, then what?
Yeah,
okay. Definitely. I know you didn't mean it that way.
No, and you know, I consider these meetings opportunities for frank conversation.
Sure, I understand.
I would rather say what I'm thinking at this meeting than walking away and say, man, I wish I had said, you know, that's my opinion about the thing not working. I just believe in democratic institutions. I've never seen anyone come to this meeting and say, man, I heard something from the law school that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I just think there's power in numbers.
Absolutely.
And I think, and I would think too, that part of what this can open up for us is an ability to make sure that what we're discussing here gets translated back to the different areas on campus. Because I know you probably go back to your department and do a great job at sharing information. I know that Leslie, Tim, and I, in our little world, go back and share information.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sharing information with the law school, and I'm not sharing with the campus or Statler. So those people, we're losing out on those people. So that's where I think
it
doesn't work. But I think our committees and, you know, the work that you're doing in education and the work that we're doing in you know, policy review and stuff like that, I think is working and is good.
Gary or Tanya, can one of you formulate a motion that we can...
So I would make a motion that we conceptually approve the concept of a 33-seat employee assembly, but also support the creation of a small working group to assess its viability.
Second it.
Sure.
Third. any discussion on that? And just to kind of clarify, this isn't a formal charter changing resolution or anything, and I believe this sounds like that we are taking the work of the ad hoc committee on the charter review of our makeup, and with this letter submitting it to the president and senior administration, saying we would like to further this idea into a working group that's more broader across the university now and see where it goes next. Does that summarize?
Yeah. Okay. Do you need to ask permission for the working group, or are we just being polite?
I think because we want these guys, we want Scorton and Opperman and Tommy and Peggy to be on our team at the end of the day. We're saying, please give us some feedback, but we can go ahead and start with the group. But we need, you know, I need Mary to say, yeah, I want this person from my department to be at that, in that working group.
Is there any other further discussion? Should we go to a vote? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Oh. Any opposed? Abstain? Okay. Motion passes.
So I'm going to email you this. Can you crank it over to Gordon?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
will do. Just to be to let our fellow assemblies be aware of what we're doing, I will probably CC this to the actions list as well. Or may send it to President Gordon via the actions email. All right, thank you. All right. Report from the employee elected trustee.
That would be me. I have a report because the Board of Trustees had a full meeting January 21st to 23rd in New York City, and I attended several committee meetings as well as the full board meetings. So I'll give you highlights of what I think I'm allowed to share. I'm still a little bit confused. I attended a joint student services and academic affairs committee. And the discussion revolved around student enrollment, which, if you read the task force reports, was in quite a few of the task force reports about generating income. And so it was a lively discussion, and the trustees didn't vote on anything, but they did hear recommendations and will most likely focus on other ways to save money and increase our income. Oh. Government Relations Committee, the highlight was just the success in President Skorton being on that technology committee with the governor and the resulting $25 million of seed money that the governor mentioned in his State of the State address, it was directly a result of President Skorton being on that committee to help new startup tech businesses. Another item that came up in the big meeting, which I think should be on our radar, is Cornell and its involvement with helping Haiti. And so Alice Powell is the Vice Provost for International Initiatives, and she is going to be in charge of whatever Cornell as an entity decides to do to help Haiti. You may or may not know the first AIDS clinic in Haiti ever. It's been there for 30 years, GESCO is called. It's huge, and it was one of the places that was devastated, and Cornell already has a presence there. And so you might have seen fundraising solicitations to help Cornell through that avenue, but she's trying to figure out what more we can do in terms of students helping, staff helping, faculty helping, and the larger community helping. And so it will be a concerted effort, and I'm just encouraging us to keep in touch with her if there's anything we can do to help move that forward.
You said that was Alice Powell.
Pell, P-E-L-L.
Mm-hmm. Matt, is there any sense of, have all the Cornell people that were in Haiti been accounted for, found? We had some folks over there, I guess, from the university. Was there any word on that?
There was, and I don't 100% remember, but I believe we lost some staff, maybe three people, something like that. So, yeah, it's not a pretty picture, and they actually showed a photo of this clinic, which has this giant acreage, like 5 acres around it, and there are 5,000 people camped out there waiting for medical help. And the professor who was sent down from civil engineering went down to assess the building structure to make sure it's not going to fall in. And anyway, the hurricane season is coming, and so there's just a lot of stuff that It's complicated. It's very complicated down there. But we did hear a lot about that. Let's see. In terms of the budget, just the new budget model, which is the last of the task force reports, was mentioned to the trustees at the meeting, and it has since come out. And I believe the short report is on the web, but the full report is in the assembly's office, and it is a completely new model. Mm-hmm. And the old model was complex. Mm-hmm. The new model is complex. Mm-hmm. Well, it's supposed to simplify things. Yeah. The old model, they took a picture of it, a graph of this model on a slide, and it was like a Jake Jackson Pollock Kandinsky thing together. Anyway, it got quite a few laughs. Let's see. The biggest highlight of the meeting was that the medical research building was approved. This is construction of a major research building, which will be paid for by the medical college. And the reason why it's important to Ithaca, there's one major reason, and that is that whatever Cornell spends or has in debt is all together as one Cornell. And so whatever they spend, even though they're paying for it on their own, reflects on all of Cornell. And so that's interesting. It should not have an effect on our immediate budget, but the financial people are on top of things like that.
Is that building going in New York there at the Weill?
Mm-hmm. East 69th Street. And I'm sure you can Google it and see the sketches of it. And it's beautiful and fantastic and will increase collaborations between the two campuses. All really good stuff, all very expensive.
Are they planning on using debt to finance that building?
Yes.
Okay. So this is one of those special exceptions to the building rule.
It will ultimately be paid for through 100% contributions. That's the plan. So yeah, it's the being in the room with experts in the finance world is very interesting because nobody agrees on what the future holds for us, and people feel very strongly one way or another, but it's still quite unknown. So it's just very interesting listening to all of it. Finally, the strategic plan update is that, just to be clear, I know we were enlightened at the breakfast, but there are three different plans going on here at Cornell. Mm-hmm. The strategic plan is the latest one that's been published, and it will ultimately, right now it's an outline. In April, it will be more formal. It will be a 50 to 60 page strategic plan for Cornell University moving forward. And the university is going to be looking for feedback on that, and it will be formalized feedback somehow from everybody, from all parts of Cornell, including the trustees. The other plan that you know about is the Bain plan, which looks at basically the non-academic functions at Cornell, more administrative functions. And then the third plan are the 20 task forces. So those three are all completely different but tied together. And so it adds an element of confusion to people who are trying to understand what's going on at Cornell, but it's all for the good.
Yeah.
And that is the end of my report.
A report from the Faculty Senate Liaison. Alan,
put him at the end.
Okay. So I'd like to introduce Jim Blair, our EA staff representative to the UA, and give him the floor for a minute for him to...
There was no meeting on the 27th. The last UA meeting was canceled. That would have been the first one I would have attended since being appointed. I was on the UA last year, so I'm familiar with the kinds of things they address and what the groups bring to the table. I look forward to carrying your issues forward that have cross-cutting applicability or lending support from the UA in general to your initiatives if they get stuck, if a timely response on 33 and, you know, those kinds of issues. My experience at the UA level, though, tells me that all the key assemblies feel somewhat ineffective. So as a, you know, dealing with the issue you voted on earlier, I think you need to be able to articulate clearly to President Scorton or, you know, Mary Opperman and company, what you think this is going to do for you and the assembly, and help the administration understand staff concerns better, as well as get the information out, because they'll offer you, well, I'll give you a half a page in the paw print every week, you know, 2 weeks. How, you know, is communication your issue, or do you, it sounds like you don't feel like you're being heard. I think you need to be able to articulate more than just it. I think it's a more democratic process, which it certainly is. That's just a footnote. Whatever you decide, I'll carry it forward in the university assembly, and we'll then support from that end as you desire. But I know that they would be glad to support these kind of things, and they face the same kind of, you know, seats unfilled or committees that have been there for 8 years, and has anybody done anything that's ever been passed, you know, and we struggle with that. But I can tell you, when the four bodies or the four key representative groups of the UA agree on something, things move very fast. Resolution goes up, it gets responded to, and usually the way we request it, or certainly a reasonable response back to it. So slow to get maybe that resolution forward, but once it goes, I mean, so it is a powerful body when it triggers action, and I look forward to with Leon, and I think we may still have two vacant seats. Is that all right, Amy or Ari? You know, so Leon, it's a four. We all have four representatives on that body. We've been down to Leon. Once I get to the next meeting, we'll be half representation. I can tell you it's a cordial body, so two versus four has not been an issue. At least it wasn't last year. I don't know about now. If somebody in the university assembly raises something, everybody, it's kind of like it's either going to be voted up or not, you know. Yeah, so, but from the standpoint of getting the word out, being representative, and looking like the strong organization you want, it would be good to not let those seats stay vacant for a year, because people go, well, we moved along just fine without them. You know, it doesn't help. We need to go to 33 mm-hmm. if we can't fill four.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's the government's concern. Will 33 actually help us? Structurally, on paper, it looks great. Will it really work? So I really don't know what the university assembly has been up to since the start of the semester yet. I look forward to, though, to making sure that you're aware of it, and I'll get connected to it. One thing I had, looking through the minutes, I haven't seen last year, we were working child care, cost of child care. We didn't get a raise. Nobody, you know, got a merit raise last year. I understand that merit pool is being looked at this year. Has anybody heard anything about merit pool, and do you have concerns with what you've heard or not heard since July is coming quick?
I've heard 2% increase this year.
I hadn't heard a number, so that's news, but did you hear that through a college? Or
I heard that through our accounts, our budget person, and my department.
One of the things that I was going to kind of check on and bring up to the University Assembly is July is close. We know we've got budget models and everything else, but if we're actually going to do a merit pool and run the process this year, we've got to get the word out and actually so Rechar and others can actually make it occur. And, you know, we're, what, 4 months away? So I'm going to look into that. As just a general issue, and if there's anything else that you want brought forward, I'm sure that, you know, I'll give them a report of the meeting minutes, but if there's something specifically you want addressed or checked out, or what's the University Assembly's feeling on, mm-hmm. you know, Leon and I know, and we'll be glad to.
I think one thing this group will be interested in hearing, I'm on the Codes and Judicial Committee, so we deal with the campus code of conduct, which primarily is a UA thing.
Yes, it is.
And a lot of people don't know the campus code of conduct isn't just for students, it's also for staff and faculty. and there's things that come into play regarding code or conduct issues, that if something happened off campus with one of us, we could be held, you know, responsible on campus. It's one of these kind of like things that we forget sometimes, the breadth of the campus code of conduct. And you guys debate that more than we
do. Yes, most of the work's done in the committee, and they bring forward proposals if they want to change the, like there's a discrimination.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday. Yeah.
So the UA itself in the recent past has dealt with what the judicial committee sends forward. This is what we want to do, and as I can recall, all but one. There was a group that not the campus code, but of safety wanted to make the boards off limits and some things like that, and pretty much killed that idea because we didn't think it was in the best traditions of Cornell, and that yes, somebody gets hurt every year, but we doubt being able to ticket them would change that. But everything else as far as change the code C to add these words, that words, the vote happens there. The key business happens in the committee.
Yep.
If the committee sends it forward, it's taken very seriously. I don't think we too often inquire, so committee, what are you dealing with this week? We expect you to let us know if you're not getting supported. One of the issues last year was there was vacancies on some of these groups that actually adjudicate the cases. And so we put some muscle, for lack of a better word, trying to get those filled. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure, we were probably more successful than not, but I don't think we were perfect. So no real report, but I look forward to working with all of you, and don't hesitate to, I'm sure my email address and stuff will at some point make it in the minutes or on the site or other things, and don't hesitate to include me in those, and I'll carry forth your business as appropriate and as you desire to that body. I'm back.
Thank you. And now we have Janine Kraus from the UA's Sustainability Committee.
Mm-hmm. Hi. Thank you. So I'll just introduce myself real quick, but I do have a couple of things. I'm from the University of Assembly Sustainability Committee, which was just created last year. And we're trying to make sure that we're getting input from all the different assemblies. So I'll be attending these meetings and taking information back and forth. Also, I actually am going to be going on leave at the end of March. So if there's anyone else who would be interested in attending a monthly meeting about sustainability, you can let me know. Otherwise, I can find someone else to come closer as a liaison. And if your departments are working on any sustainability initiatives that they would like assembly backing on, I can certainly bring those forward. Right now, we actually did bring forward a resolution to create a revolving loan fund where departments could apply to get loans to sustainability related projects that they would then be able to pay off through their energy savings. So we're still working on hopefully making that a reality eventually. Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Sustainability is a big, powerful word, and there have been a lot of sustainability bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your charter authority?
Okay.
I mean, where do you fit in the scheme of things, and what should we look to you for needs to be sustainable?
Yeah.
Are you one-stop shop now, and they're canvassing all the other efforts, or are you...
No. I think as far as we're just trying to be a place where, because it seems like there's a lot of efforts on, especially like the student assembly and the graduate and professional student assembly, for their sustainability-related initiatives, like they're doing a Lights Out campaign, or they're trying to get together a Lights Out campaign to bring attention just to turning off lights in buildings when they're not in use, they're not necessary. And so we're, I guess, just a forum for all of the assemblies to be able to come together, and if we're working on parallel things, be able to share what we're working on, and decide if different somebody's want to join forces. And I guess just another way to maybe second some of the resolutions that might happen in the assemblies so that that person may be getting more than one resolution. And then we are looking at seeing if some of the different sustainability groups or different even departments on campus want to do some coordinated marketing of Earth Day type activities that would happen in April, and there will be a meeting for people to share ideas or see if that's something that people are interested in on February 9th at 4:30 in Rice Hall 300. That's open to student groups, faculty, staff groups, and different departments. So if your department has anything that they're interested in marketing along with other departments and student groups, you can feel free to send our representatives to me.
When is it again?
February 9th at 4:30 in Rice Hall Theater.
Any other questions for Jean? Thank you. You're welcome. We will skip over the EA finance update, awaiting Alan. Report from GPSA representative, Ben.
So we've had two meetings with GPSA. For those of you who don't know, we also have a very large constituency and struggle with issues of representation. And so what we have set up is an advisory group that consists of representatives from each of the graduate fields. And then from that advisory group, there's a voting group that maintains logistics, and we alternate meetings. The voting group met on January 25th, and we got to hear our trustee report, who mentioned the housing and enrollment as well. That's been a concern for graduate students because Hasbrook housing is an area that we felt we needed to defend against interests of housing a lot of undergrads out there. And so we were very relieved to hear that that's probably increased enrollment is probably not the way that the university is going to go. So we were very happy about that. We looked at three different resolutions endorsing an open access publishing model to reduce costs of journal subscriptions, to get more involved with the cinema advisory board because there was so much contention about the byline funding process this year. That was more on the undergraduate side than the graduate side, but since we're part of that process, we wanted to be involved in the cinema advisory board to facilitate that communication as well. And then there was a resolution to discuss how better to ensure representation on the voting body from the Geneva Experimental Station. We didn't act on that third resolution yet. It's still in discussion. And then on February 1st, the entire advisory body met, and we heard a report on the strategic plan from Provost Fox and Professor Lawler. We heard a report from the university librarian Ann Kenny discussing just sort of some of the ongoing conversations about collection consolidation and how they're dealing with the financial changes. And a report from Gail Finnan from Cornell Dining. She's a very enthusiastic person who keen to give out free food and things like that. So,
I don't do our meeting.
She'll be glad to discuss Cornell Dining options with you. She's actively seeking feedback. They're very open to all sorts of dining options and what people think of their food. And Gail Finan, F-I-N-A-N. There was a lot of good business discussed, but she probably stole the spotlight, I think. And then as far as our efforts, sustainability is a focus that we're doing. So I'll pass on that the Lights Out campaign was mentioned here, and I'm sure that the people spearheading that will be pretty enthusiastic to know that the word is spreading. A lot of that at this point is just sort of data collection and observing which lights are left on. For example, the security booths, the parking direction lights are left on all the time. So just sort of getting aware and then encouraging how do we as a university officially encourage people to turn lights off. We're looking at replacing the cups in the big red barn with mugs and other proactive things that we can do, small steps as part of the university community. There's a lot of interest in the graduate community about mental health support, and I think sort of awareness of the peer support groups that are available, and emerging awareness that that's available for graduate students as well as undergraduates. And then there was some discussion about Haiti efforts on campus and what unique contributions graduate students might be able to make to that. Some of us have more professional experience than the undergraduates. There's certainly people in planning and design who are, there's people in civil and environmental engineering who know infrastructure design. And so just sort of what efforts can we do to make those resources available as the unique part of the university community that we are. And then I guess the final thing on my report is I've been asked to invite your group to send a liaison to our advisory body meetings. The next advisory body meeting is Monday, March 1st in the Willard Strait Memorial Room from 5:30 to 7 p.m. And then the one following that is Monday, April 5th at the same time, but the location hasn't been determined yet. So I appreciate being able to liaise with you, and we invite you to send one to ours too.
Would that be a permanent liaison?
I believe that's the intent.
Okay.
Can we appoint you?
I'm not really sure which constituency I'm serving. That'd be a little tricky one.
Yeah,
and dishwashers get paid more than graduate students at Cornell, so that would be kind of bad. No, it's a wonderful thing. But I think, you know, on a slightly more serious note, I think there is a long history and interest in discussion in exactly how graduate students straddle the fences between students and staff. And so I think, you know, in discussions about benefits, employee education, all these things, graduate students are sometimes caught in the crossroads, because especially first and second year graduate students who haven't yet completed their coursework are clearly function more as students. When it comes to salary benefit, the university seems to be very happy to keep us as students. After we're done with coursework, we still pay full tuition. We're not treated as staff, but we serve a lot of staff functions. So there's a lot of history there. I think I would prefer not to serve both constituencies.
I told Gary in the campus code of conduct not to remove indentured servitude.
It's fairly well established.
Does anybody have an interest in serving in that capacity?
Leon.
Yes. Anybody? The following people are not present in the room at the time.
It is in the evening and there is free food.
I wouldn't mind attending the first one, but I don't know if I'd commit long term, and then we can have a greater interest to see who.
Well, I think even if we're a roving liaison shift, if one person came to each meeting, we'd have to.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Alan, we got a whole to-do list for you.
Sign you up on a couple of
days. As chair.
Report from the Faculty Senate Liaison.
They haven't met since last time, so there is a meeting coming up next week.
Okay, and the finance update.
Finance update is that we have gotten our final budget in, and Tanya has come in within, what was it,
$74.
So the final budget was $1,074, apples and all. So that's a wrap on our president's address the staff of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't have anything specifically to report from the chair. It's been very hectic. It's been a very challenging semester startup for me and my department. But I do want to take this time to kind of have a little discussion with our Schwartz Center staff and have a little few minutes here of sharing what they know and how they may be impacted. So, Tanya, do you want to kick it off?
I'm sure if you haven't read the Cornell Daily,
where I was misquoted.
Yeah, or Leslie was misquoted for every record.
How were you misquoted?
Well, pretty much they took about three paragraphs of information I said and kind of muddled it around and said that one third of our non-tenured faculty would be laid off, which technically is true. It may, but it may be three. It may be all of them. You know, we just don't know.
Okay.
But so somehow we came up with this.
Or you guys should explain for anyone who might not know.
Monday we had a meeting. Monday we had a meeting with Dean LePage and the Associate Dean Elizabeth
Regan.
And they came down to talk about the fact that our department is going to receive significant cuts to the tune of $1 to $2 million, which is a large span
of our $4.6 million
budget.
So over the next 2 years.
Over the next 2 years, so it is a devastating impact. One that Leslie and Tim and I are all feeling. Very strongly, because tenured faculty cannot be touched. Lecturers cannot be touched for a year. We have no kind of discretionary funds to give back, so the cuts for this year will come from staff. The college has agreed to take a $400,000 cut this year. So we're looking at different strategies. One of them is cutting down our professional actors from 5 to 3 and using soft funds to cover them for a year. We are looking at cutting our season from 6 to 3 productions. The message that was given quite clearly from the leadership of the college is that the service that we provide to the community is not of importance to Cornell.
Or to the students.
Or to the students. That is not something that they are concerned to preserve at this time. So,
basically, the performing arts. I mean, they're still going to teach classes.
Okay.
They're still going to be faculty. They're still going to be teaching classes, but most likely the performing, hands-on, creative design part of
some of that argument is. They'll still be teaching classes, but a majority of our classes are taught by senior lecturers who fall under the staff category. So they are not vulnerable to being laid off this year. They have to be given a 1 year's notice. So conceivably, by next fall, they would then be given notice that you may be losing your job as well.
They've all been given that notice in the email. In the email we got.
Someone did a calculation of the number of classes taught. I'm sorry. Someone did a calculation of the number of classes taught by lecturers compared to, well, not compared to faculty, but the number of classes that would be taught by lecturers that would be lost, and it was something like out of 40-odd classes, 20 to 25 classes would conceivably have to disappear or be taught by faculty if we were to lose the lecturers. What I'd like to point out, and I don't know if you were going to get there, and that I think is of relevance to this body. Mm-hmm. I mean, our issues are considerable, and that's our problem to a certain extent. But I think how everyone here should be made aware of the way the situation was handled
mm-hmm.
was, personally, I felt pathetic. Dean LePage and Assistant Dean Regan, or Associate Dean, whatever her proper title is, they came in having, they openly acknowledged, we are not experts in what you do here, and that's why we've come to talk to you, the experts.
Pointed out where their subscriber seats were.
Right, which that's fine and relevant for them to acknowledge that, all right, we don't know exactly how this place works. But then they proceeded to go on and show a fair degree of ignorance about the actual budgets. The things that they are so concerned about cutting and getting money back on, they display a complete lack of familiarity with. Things like saying, well, you could just do less lavish shows, which one of our faculty members pointed out. Well, our budgets for our shows, the actual productions come from box office, and it's the staff who build the shows that's where the budgets are. And they didn't seem to be aware of that. So from the standpoint of an HR perspective of a, this is how you should be doing this, they stood there and bumbled and comforted their way through an hour and 15 minutes of heated questions, really not offering anything valid, useful, or informative. And, you know, not even an apology, not that one's necessarily expecting it. Gee, we're sorry, folks. But the clear lack of information on their part, that they hadn't done any homework,
And if that is how they're going to go around to other departments, and not these people, these folks, I grant they're in a tough position and it's awful for them, but if that's the way this is going to run in other departments, because they stated that they're looking at 600 layoffs throughout the university, that is reprehensible, I think. The way we were dealt with was poor, pathetic, whatever, I'm getting heated about it, but I think you get the idea, and I think that we discussed, is there something the EAA could do to put forward to, whether it's Mary Opperman or whom, our concerns over how they address this coming for future departments, because there are going to be plenty of other places around the campus that are going to be dealing with this same situation, and it's like, just out of deference and respect to the people who work there, they deserve a better approach.
Specifically to other departments in the arts and sciences would be getting this news. So we would, you know, we would love to soften the blow for those folks. And the Associate Dean specifically introduced her statements by saying, I just want you to know that, you know, 600 other people on this campus are going to be laid off, so you're in good company.
Those are the comments
there
that you
poor
hear.
Choices in phrazing that
and
showed a lack of empathy.
And the entire time, I mean, they knew that this was a devastating blow to people, and instead of referring to us as people, we were referred to as non-tenure expenditures, non-professorial expenditures. I'm a person, I've worked for the university for a long time, and a lot of people haven't, to be referred to in that way is disappointing, and it was very disappointing to have a representative from the College of Arts and Sciences, HR, sit there and not say a word about that.
Do you know if any of this was a result of the academic strategic planning or academic?
Yes, it was linked to the Cohen Report. And I don't think, I mean, yes, this is a devastating blow to us personally. It impacts our jobs, it impacts our livelihoods, and frankly, it impacts the fact that the majority of the people, there aren't many arts jobs in this area, so a lot of people are looking at the fact that they will leave the community. The bigger issue I feel, and you know, I mean, I have a job in 6 months, but the bigger issue that I feel is that we've been good employees and good stewards of Cornell University for a long time, and we should be treated respectfully and with care and concern. You know, Mary talked about a caring community, and I don't feel like the community cared about me at all in that meeting. And then to walk out of the meeting and an hour to an hour and a half later to get an email from department leadership that said, many of you are, I'm sure, wondering about severance packages. Well, I'll set up a meeting for all of you to meet with College HR on your severance package is careless and unthoughtful too, because they didn't even allow us the opportunity to process the impact, and then to already be thinking, oh my God, I have to go to a meeting about my severance package, and I don't even know if I'm being laid off yet. No decisions have been made. And the fact that the dean said, I want all of you in this room to sit and have a conversation about what the cuts should be and re-envision the department.
You are creative people. You're a very
creative
bunch. It's time for you to be creative.
So how...
was very much... was literally and figuratively what was said.
And we do have all of this...
passing the onus on to us.
Recorded.
Right.
Yeah. So the first public meeting?
This meeting.
This event was recorded.
Because that's what we do in theater.
Did they know it was recorded?
The tape recorder was sitting right there in plain sight. Okay.
It was more about
the delivery than.
Just to be clear again, who was presenting this? It was the College of
Arts and Sciences,
the
Dean,
and the Associate Dean of Arts and Sciences, and then a representative from HR.
Sarah Strickland was there, and Susan Robertson, as the College of Arts and Sciences communications person, was there. And then the chair of our department and our artistic director, who said a few words afterwards.
So if they cut back across the university, why did they target your college like this?
They
usually come out at once, or, you know, like they, everybody kind of knows it's
right.
The same.
They hits all at once, yeah, I don't know what the rationale entirely was.
I know Cal's, we've been taking them periodically. Have you guys been taking them all along?
We took a cut last year. And now we are into that second round of cuts. And essentially, I think that it came out this way because it is such a large cut. The dean said to us that, you know, $6 million still needs to be cut from the Arts College. So if $2 million are coming from us, that is a third of all of the arts and sciences cuts.
I think so. I think we need to continue this conversation.
Absolutely.
With Beth and David, I think we will talk to Mary very soon to try to maybe figure out how this happened. Obviously, it wasn't Mary. If Mary was there, there would be a different picture, I would hope. But the message obviously was come down from a college administration, and it's not fitting the Cornell model, like you're saying. You know,
a lot
hearing
of
and respectfulness
in the face of that recent draft that came out of the discussions of encouraging staff excellence and creativity and all these kinds of things and respect for all these for the people who work for us, and it was sort of cartoonishly the opposite of that.
Yeah.
In the way it was handled.
And
again, it's like this should not happen.
I'm just shocked to hear the report.
Well, something
would love to listen to that
note,
audio.
My boss was at a director's communications director's meeting yesterday, and they were all told, you know, about the 600 layoffs to start getting letters ready. And my first thought was, well, why aren't they doing, like, each communicator, each college would write their own letter. Why isn't the university sending the same message
as
across?
Unified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, like, one department might get a careless letter compared to another, you know?
Right.
Maybe that can be stopped.
Are letters going to end up in our mailbox?
Well, maybe it's even fresh stuff when it hits there. I'm not sure exactly what the letter was. I shouldn't really speak on that. But
I do not off the top of my head.
I just think non-HR professionals are going to deliver these messages. There needs to be some coaching and training on sensitivity.
Media training, right?
Yeah.
That's a whole separate issue.
Yeah. Their presentation. Yeah. What was sad was that these are people who are I'm not sure what their exact titles are. If they're scientists, if they're historians, you know, they're non managerial, and they handled their leadership responsibilities with a profound absence of skill and leadership. And it seems like at this institution that is supposed to prize so highly these skills and quality and high caliber talent, the absence of that on display here was appalling.
Don't forget that when the first set of layoffs happened last year, it was early retirement and all that, so they kind of set a precedent. I think we were at an expectation. So they were trying very hard at that time, for better or worse, whether it was successful or not, but nonetheless, it was an effort to be, you know, genteel and to
right.
be this and a very, and so I think that's what we're all kind of expecting is that sort of thing. This obviously didn't.
So we didn't get
that.
It was clumsy. It was clumsy
year.
Last year for us as well.
Oh, was
so
it?
This
okay.
is even
okay.
more clumsy,
okay.
and this is clumsy on a magnitude.
Okay, folks, we this conversation will definitely be continued. I will look into when our next chair, vice chair, trustee.
Mm-hmm.
meeting is with Mary and or see if we can bump that up sooner to see if we can get a direct dialogue with Mary. And Mary is scheduled to come to us on March 3rd. That's two meetings away.
Everything that's going down is going to happen very quickly.
Yeah, that's why I think sooner
yeah.
than later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Better.
All right, thank you. And
thank you.
I was not expecting to hear some of the things that you guys shared. So, approval of the minutes of our January 20th, 2010 meeting. Take a moment to look over those, and I'll entertain a motion.
Sure, certainly.
Thank you.
there a motion to approve these minutes?
Motion to approve.
One second.
Any discussion? All those in favor of approving the 2010 minute, or yeah, all of the 2010 minutes. Say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain. Then it's passed. Thank you. Things have been pretty hectic. We haven't had an executive committee meeting, so I'm going to have nothing to report there.
We sort of met.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Gary, Amy, Alan.
Oh, go ahead then. Sorry.
We just talked about putting the membership, the charter, ad hoc charter thing on the agenda, and then we just, I don't know that we really talked about much else.
No. I can report that the personnel policy committee met.
Okay. We'll get there.
Oh, you didn't get there.
Get that guy on the agenda. All right. Anything else?
The last item on
staff recognition and awards.
We met last Friday and selected a winner for the George Peter Award. Mm-hmm. So, Amy, I don't know if you've been able to get in contact and share that.
I can talk to you later.
Okay.
That's to be kept confidential.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Is it?
Until that person's been notified.
I'll get it on your calendars.
A lot of times it's a surprise.
Oh, okay.
And so, it's on the recording, then.
Yeah. All right.
So that went really well. We're going to be scheduling another meeting for March and really trying to push to get more people to nominate. We only had 3 applicants to look to. So I would encourage you, you know, when you go back to your department, spread the word, and if you can get people to nominate staff, it's a great opportunity to show, you know, pride in someone you work with. The other thing that we talked about a little bit is that it would be great to have some sort of little kudos to people. And this idea of having maybe an email box where someone that we would publicize through our e-newsletter and maybe through paw print, where someone can write in and say, oh, I was over in such and such a department, and they were really helpful answering my question. You know, I called payroll, and I talked to so-and-so on the phone who really helped answer my question. And you could just write it in, it's short and sweet, and then we would, in our EA quarterly newsletter, we would publish all these kudos.
It's like the laurels without the dart.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think people would really look forward to reading it, too, in the newsletter, and that they might read some of the other stuff.
Right, and we can look, you know, to see if the paw print would maybe publish them. If we end up getting a lot of them, could publish them more frequently. And I think it is just a very small, non-financial, easy way to thank the people that you work with or around.
Thank you. David is not here. Does anybody have any report from the communications committee?
I just want to tell everybody who's on Facebook to friend our employee assembly page and invite others to join it as well. Okay. So we've gone from 2 people to 11. Based on me sending it to my friends.
Yeah.
And I started to post some things there, but we can make all the employee assembly members administrators. I don't see why we couldn't.
I'll talk to you offline, okay. And right. There's a little trick that I want to introduce for publicizing the URL, because Facebook's URLs for pages are just horrendous, so
yeah.
I've got a little fix for that.
Okay, yeah, we want to put something in the newsletter about...
Yeah, I'm having that weird-looking URL.
Yeah.
It's atrocious.
Better ways to do that. But if there's... I didn't really spend that much time on it. I just added some information to it. But, yeah, because as we go along, like, Soup and Hope and stuff, we could take some photos, and it'd be nice for us to have a little friendly presence.
I think once we can announce it in our first newsletter, it will explode in popularity, because those people that like Facebook and use it will, oh, yeah, easy to join, you know, click, and mm-hmm. they're done.
So. Yeah, so, but if people could share,
thank you.
Invite people to join us.
The Emergency Grant Care Fund, I have not heard back from the President's office on a resolution, but that usually can take a couple weeks. Personnel policy.
Go ahead, Ellen.
We met last week, and are honing in on one or two items of personnel policy relatedness that we would agree among ourselves to look into, to benchmark, and then ultimately to bring back here for a potential resolution. So when that's a little firmer, I think we, you know, report on the direction we're going, so we don't go off and then find that, you know, this wasn't a good idea or there's a better idea or something. But one of the areas is around flex in the workplace. That's something we're looking at closely, and the bargaining unit aspect of Cornell policy and how it's made relating to personnel as well. A little teaser. More to come.
Okay. Thank you. Internal operations?
I don't think we have anything. All the committees are all up on the web now, thanks to Amy, right? And I guess we have some UACs as well.
University benefits, no report, still on hiatus. Employee education?
We met last week ago and generated a list of questions to ask Maureen Brule, who is the she oversees, I guess, the education. And I invited her to the meeting, and she initially said yes, and then I just got an email that before I got here and said, actually, my boss, Paul Persick, and her supervisor, I can't leave the names right now, would like to also attend. Could we reschedule for a time when we all are? So they will be attending the March 3rd, the first March meeting to talk about the various questions. We're asking her a series of questions, including things like, is the education benefit being looked at by Bain? And, you know, what is the cost of the university and things like that. So we're asking, I guess, pretty hard questions, and I guess it got some attention. So it'll be a very exciting meeting.
You're supposed to have a meeting tomorrow, right?
We are, and so we'll do something else tomorrow.
Because,
I'll put a note out this afternoon that we had to reschedule that one. I mean, the other option would be to cancel the meeting tomorrow, and that's a possibility. I'll think about it today.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody have any Cornell? I think we have quite a we had a Cornell in transition update. Not a very happy one.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Any old business, new business, or open forum?
I happen to know one of the people, not closely, but in another kind of social area, who is one of the people that announced this. And I sort of knew that this was, she wasn't specific about what was going on in any real substantive way, but I guess what's more important, whether or not she told or not told, is that there are rumors flying around the campus right now. It is rampant. I can't tell you how many different rumors I've heard just about my college. I mean, I think I've gone through six different iterations of rumors just in the last 2 days. I'm a little concerned about that, and I don't know why. I mean, I know that happens in large universities, in any institution, there are always rumors. But it's also, I think, indicating just how sort of secretive things are right now and that there isn't transparency. And we have not talked to Scorton in a while or Mary Opperman, and I really wish that there could be some clear. I mean, the fact that this happened to you is really, and the fact that many of us who weren't privy to that, not in our consciousness, and hear that, I think is really unconscionable. We really need to know. So that's all I have to say.
Well, I think it's very easy to start a room mill. I mean, we got an email Thursday morning that we needed to be at this meeting on Monday morning at 8 a.m.
Right.
That was going to have a significant. So right then and there, you know, everyone on Thursday, Friday, to spin every wild rumor imaginable.
And
the
chair, vice chair, we didn't have any heads up that this was coming, so we didn't know.
Yeah.
It's only becoming apparent now because people have been letting the students know, and the students are informing the sun, and it's sort of spreading virally, but it's not officially spreading in any capacity. And I think that does beg the question of, you know, shouldn't the administration be out in front of this?
Like I said, we will try to do some damage control and figure out what went wrong, or what central administration might be able to do to help the colleges not deliver the message the way they did.
This is much looking out for others down the line as it is. Yes, it would be nice to get a little sense of why it happened to us specifically, but I think it's also, well, what about everyone else? Because this will be happening elsewhere, and it's unfair to others.
The Sun had a good editorial that same day about transparency at the university level is working very well. At lower levels, it's not.
Right.
And I certainly observe that in my department as well.
What do you mean by lower levels?
Unit
department. As you get in college, you hone in on the more focused.
The provost are being very forthcoming about the public forums, the university level strategic vision.
Right.
But the implementation of that division by deans at colleges and the way that decision is being led by the faculty is not a transparent problem.
The hard news. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all fine to say this is what it's going to look like, but then, you know, once you get down to the hard news, nobody wants to talk about it.
I hate to bring, this, but that pattern of first layoff, happy, multiple layoffs after that, unhappy, that pattern happened three times at NYSEG. Mm-hmm. And it was predictable. I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's just typical for the process. It kind of just often turns out that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's totally different on the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But the transparency was also on a higher level strategic plan with the actual implementation of you losing 60 people, marketing's gone, generation's gone. That was not, it was like tomorrow, show up, gone.
Anybody else? Have any?
Anybody got a positive?
Any open, new, old, moldy,
anybody
fresh?
Anybody have jobs open? Because
we'll be bringing our
resumes. Hey, you're around the table, isn't it?
Oh, we've been
anybody.
We've been forgetting
something positive about
it. I sold my house.
That's pretty
quick.
Wait, the old
house.
Yeah.
Sold one house.
Yeah.
Oh,
one house.
I got another house.
B house.
A house. Yes.
Okay. Before this goes too much further. All right. Motion to adjourn. Anyone? Have one? From Gemma, anyone want a second?
I second.
All right.
Everyone come to Soiree Cabaret.
Yeah.
We need the money.
You're going to have a tip box? Thank you.
It is a very clever and thoughtful show that